following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
This episode from Radioland is brought to you, as always, by our friends at Central Barbecue. Those of you in Memphis know all about it. Three great locations here in town. Voted number one barbecue place in the city. It's been that way for a long time, and rightfully so. Those of you living outside the area are sitting there going, hey, bro, what about us? Well, you can get the taste of Central Barbecue right on your doorstep. Slow-smoked pork goodness. Oh, my God. Those pulled pork sandwiches are to die for. Also, their ribs, Memphis-style, slow-smoked as well. Can't get them like that anywhere else, I can promise you that. You only get them at Central Barbecue. Want to find them? A couple of groovy places on our website, radio-memphis.com. Look for their banner ad. It's at the top of the very top of the main page. It's in a rotating banner up there. Just wait for it. It'll come up. Or if you're impatient, like a lot of people, go to cbqmemphis.com. Order you some. Order it on a Monday. They'll have it to you on a Wednesday. It's like that. You live anywhere in the continental United States, they'll ship it right to your door. Impress your neighbors and your friends and make some new friends while you're at it. Or just do it for yourself and be greedy. That's the way to do it. Central Barbecue, proud sponsors from Radioland as we get the show started right now. Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland. A good show, a very special show for us as well. We've got some music, as we always do, and we've also got for you, kind of a first for us, three guests happening on this thing. It happened on an episode of the Booze and Blues radio show. We've got it here for you. Jeff and I'll have a conversation. I'll get to that here in a bit. I've been keeping a close eye on the doings of Flint, Michigan. Although there's not much comedy to be had up there, although you would think the people there, this is messed up. You've got adults and children going through lead poisoning. There's going to be a generation of kids up there that are going to be messed up for the rest of their lives as a result of this business. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why no one has been arrested. Why the mayor and city council of the city of Flint, Michigan have not been put into prison is beyond me. And for that matter, the governor of the state of Michigan. The president did declare a state of emergency, which released up to about $5 million in funds to help these people. Where the hell is the disaster relief people? Who knows? Probably because the federal government has not declared it a disaster, although I think it kind of is a disaster. It's a disaster brought on by greed, by corporate and government greed, go figure, such as the case may be. And everybody has been up in arms. We need to send water. We need to help our people. That's all. Those are great sentiments. But I'm of the school here now that I think you should stop sending water. Do not send one more bottle of water to Flint, Michigan.
Whoa, bro, that seems kind of harsh.
Well, it's not. It is the responsibility of people to make sure that their people, the governments have to take care of their people. Having access to good, clean water is not a privilege. It's a right. It's what we have. We live in a civilized world. We weren't impacted by some massive hurricane or an earthquake up there that have caused this. It was caused by greed. And yet nobody's really doing anything about it, per se. We need to send plumbers. We need to send pipe. We need to send things that would solve the problem. When the city of Flint decided to pull their water from the Flint River, the heavily polluted Flint River, somewhat 19 times more polluted than the Detroit River. And they could have for $100 a day filtered out that water and cleaned it. But they didn't because of their greed. And frankly, they need to be all thrown into prison. Stop sending water. If you're handy with the plumbing, get up there. Help these people. Our infrastructure is falling apart in this country, and this is a prime example of what's going on. There's a lot of iron piping there. That's what gives it that groovy rust color. But the problem is it's leaching lead from the lead piping that's in half of the plumbing in the city of Flint is made of lead. It's old. It needs to be dealt with. It needs to be corrected. And I also personally, I think that the government there should take care of those people that have been afflicted by lead poisoning for the rest of their natural lives. Is it too much to ask? Nope. Not at all. You screwed up the water, take care of the people. That's how that works. So, there. All right, kids, let's get into the show. What we have for you this time out, like I mentioned, we have three guests for you this time out. Our friend, Miss Toni Green, she is a resident of Paris, France. She's from the Memphis area, a hell of a singer. We also have for you Mr. Howard Grimes, great drummer. And we also have for you Mr. John Gary Williams. This was his first time out in the studio. You'll hear about all of that. The three of them, we got them together to have a very special conversation about Mr. Willie Mitchell. Willie was a record producer here and a musician here in Memphis. He's best known for his High Records label about the somewhere around the 1970s. He released albums. Large stable of popular Memphis soul artists, including himself, Al Green, O.V. Wright, Syl Johnson, Ann Peebles, and another outfit called Quiet Elegance. Was very prolific up till his death in 2010, and worked with our three guests. Yes, Toni was the last project that Willie had. Howard worked with him as part of the High Records rhythm section. And John Gary Williams was in the Mad Lads and was also produced by the great Mr. Willie Mitchell. It's a retrospect, if you will. If you're a fan of Memphis music, you'll be a fan of this show. This is how it all went down right here from Radioland.
Howard is here in the room, and it's good to have you back in here, Mr. Grimes. It's good to see you. You're looking good.
Thank you very much. It's good to see you guys again.
Well, we had such a great time with you last time, and I know you wanted to come in, and I know you wanted to talk about Willie Mitchell.
Yes.
And since your last visit, we met Miss Toni Green, who has worked with Willie.
Oh yeah.
And at some point tonight, I believe Anna Mitchell will join us.
Wow.
That's
fantastic. Yeah, Willie's daughter. Nice. And we tried to get Boo to come in, but Boo is busy tonight. He's got a lot on his
plate. In the studio working right now, so.
So those of you that are tuned in tonight in here, of course, Mr. Howard Grimes, Miss Toni Green is in here. Anna will be here at some point, hopefully. And John Gary Williams is here from the Mad Lads.
Yes.
John, how are you, my friend?
I'm great. I'm blessed.
I'm glad to have you in here. This is your first time in here.
It's my very first time.
Now, this was a recording studio at one point, and it's about to be again. Some more equipment came in over the weekend, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's going to be fantastic. What's the name of studio?
Well, this used to be Twilight Records. Mm-hmm. From about 1959 to somewhere in the 70s or 80s, it was a facility where a lot of guys came down here and laid down some records. R.L. Burnside was one of them that worked in here.
You're going to be interested in doing an old group such as
I would love to. Yeah. I would absolutely love to.
Yeah. Hey, that would be fantastic.
We would love to have that. It's you know, we want to keep the traditions of what it was down here at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Rich used to use this as his rehearsal and recording place as well, and before this wall had come in. And Behind Closed Doors was one of the records that was done down here, and so we're still trying to sort out the histories of everything that was down here at one point. So.
Well, it's good to see you guys keeping the things going the way they were, and trying to bring it back
and make it great. Yeah.
Well, we're trying.
One of the things that we have noticed since we have been here is the resurgence of Memphis music, especially over the past several years, the past 3, 4, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
People are really starting to pay attention of what's coming out of this city.
Finally.
And on the shoulders of what you guys have done, and you as well,
yes,
have laid down over the history of the music scene in this town, I think is so important, because a lot of the youngsters that are out there, they're copying into it. They're jumping into it, and they're making it their own, and we're hearing some fantastic stuff.
Yes, great.
So thanks to what you guys have done. And I guess our thanks, too, to Willie over the years, too, because you, every one of y'all have worked with Willie.
Yes.
Yes.
Now, because your record was his last.
The last
produced at Willie Mitchell Studios, wow. Miss yes. Toni Green.
Yes.
What was the song again, then?
All of them. They were Every Man Is Not not a Bad Man, Undeniable.
Mm-hmm. What was the name of that first one?
Every Man Is Not a Bad Man.
My ex-girlfriend's out there listening. That's what you hear.
Well, you know, we just mentioned it. We were talking outside of the control room, and I was telling Toni, I like that one because it involved everybody. Everybody could relate to it. And I was cheering.
Definitely.
That's right.
Well, Willie had such
I didn't mean to cut you.
No, no, that's fine. But Willie had such an impact on the music scene in that time. I mean, but obviously it wasn't wasn't set out to have that impact. It just happened. Yeah. I mean, because he was so talented. What was it like? Let me start with you. What was it like to work with Willie? I mean, was he a special ear? Was it a special talent? Was he a taskmaster? Was he just very easygoing?
He was a complicated man. Wonderful. Wonderful man.
Yeah.
Wonderfully complicated. And had one of the greatest ears for music.
Yes.
That I've, the instinct
yeah.
that I've ever seen or heard. In fact, the last Mad Lad album that we did, we cut it over to Willie Mitchell's, and Willie was one of the producers along with William Brown and myself.
Yeah.
And the album was, I think, For Love, Lovers, Love Songs for Lovers.
Yes.
And he would tell me, John, man, how come you're so flat? Why you so sharp? You know, and well, man, why don't you just get out the studio and let bring somebody in here that can sing the damn note? You know? But no, he had a way of bringing it out of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I appreciated him for that. He wasn't the kind of guy that went along with, oh, yeah, you sound great. If you sounded like crap, he was going to let you know.
Oh,
would you? While you're in the vocal booth, he's just pushing it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Will you be singing? I said, did you get it popping? He said, man, I didn't take that stuff. He said, I didn't even turn the machine on, man.
Yeah.
And he'll call you out and tell you exactly what he wanted and say, now, if you can't do it, I'll get somebody who can do it. I said, well, Pop, it's my album. He said, I don't care.
It's got his name on it,
too.
It's
got my name on it.
Come back when you're ready.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Come back when you get ready.
Was he a perfectionist, you'd say?
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Yes.
Almost to a fault.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he had a way of getting what pushing you. He pushed right. me. He pushed me to do some things that at my age at that particular time I didn't think I could do.
Mm-hmm. He brought the artist out.
He brought it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard that before about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was one of the best friends a man could want to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not only was he a great producer and songwriter, musician, but he was a good friend.
Yeah.
Never seen him. You know, anybody could come in the studio and sit down. He loved a joke. If you could tell a good mm-hmm. joke, you had his attention.
yeah, absolutely.
He loved a good joke.
Wow.
So it wasn't all just business. It was fun, too.
No, it was more fun than business most of the time.
Well, and I would think that in a recording environment and when you're making a record, you want to have that. You want to have some fun.
Yeah.
Because I think if you're relaxed and you're having a good time doing it, that's going to translate onto the record, I would hope.
Yeah, but he knew where to draw the line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you walked into that studio and got behind that microphone, you know, it was all business.
Right.
You know, you can leave the play outside. You can leave the jokes outside because he wanted a good record.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. For you.
Yeah, for us.
It was about you.
As artists.
Mm-hmm. Well, sure. Yeah, and there again, his name was on it.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Willie's not going to let any garbage come out of his room.
Way.
No.
Well, I know a little bit about Howard and Tony's story, but how did the Mad Lads come to work with Willie Mitchell? How did you?
Well, Willie had a club on Elvis Presley, Bellevue, and we were teenagers in high school. And he was the only somebody that would book us because we were young. Then people didn't want to mess with young.
Just wouldn't have, yeah.
And what he would do, we would come in and do a show. But we had to go upstairs and wait until it was time for us to go on stage. And after our performance, we had to leave to make sure we'd be at school on time. And that's how our relationship began. And then when my career was faltering, he reached for me.
Really?
Yeah, he along with Scott Beaumont, a couple other friends, they reached for me. I lost my confidence, Tony. Me and Tony had long conversations. And she said, man, you can do anything you want to do. But you get that out here, you know. But Pop was very instrumental in me really being able to get back in the studio and do the best that I could.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
And he became a friend, good friend.
That's important.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go on.
No, I mean, you know, we've got, I think Boo's doing a good job of carrying on the tradition. I'll say that now while Anna's not here. but you know, it's important. You don't, Memphis at that time was built, it was an industry town. So to have somebody that was, what's the word I'm looking for, trying to gestate that town, work with
right,
that town.
Right.
You know, let that high school band play in a club and give them a shot.
Mm-hmm. Let it incubate. Yeah.
I wish we had more people like that in the city
doing that.
Absolutely. Like bringing the new talent up and taking the, you know, the older talent or the more seasoned talent and helping them achieve the next level. And you know, That's important.
That that kind of happened with the Take Me to the River project that that was done, where you could see some of the veterans that were coming and working with the youngsters and, and the younger guys, and the different genres that had come through you know, and to show that all those roads do lead back to Memphis, and they do lead back to the music that, that you three have produced over the years.
Well, thank you.
You know, and I think that's important, and that's why we're glad to have you in here, because I don't ever want to lose that.
Well, thank you for having us, man.
Oh, yeah, no, we appreciate
it's
you.
It's our pleasure. Yeah. You know, I've been a fan of this stuff longer than I'd realized. You know, when Radio Memphis came about, and I started dabbling and listening to some of the stuff that came out of Stax and the stuff that was happening all around the High Records, you know, what Howard, you have done over the years, I have just fallen in love with that stuff all over again. You know?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's like what you had said about Howard last time he was in here was like, I never realized that, you know, that this stuff had come from his hands.
Well, you know, one of the things that's important to me in our relationship, speaking about Howard, on the Mad Lad's very first record, Howard played drums. Don't have to shop around. Who's Howard playing drums? Yeah. You know, that's how far back we're going. That was, what, 64, 65?
Yeah. Oh, and he played on your first record,
too? He played on my very first record, too.
Yeah.
I was a little girl. Remember running around, and they were trying to calm her down.
Yeah. But, you know, I want to clear something up. Excuse me.
Please do. Right. Please do.
I want to clear something up. When the last interview I did, I couldn't mention the gentleman that we was discussing about on Memphis, that I was doing it for. His name is David Less.
Yes.
Smithsonian.
So that's right.
Yeah.
It was David Less. I wanted to clear it up.
Well, sure. No, it's in the record now.
I'm kind of old, you know. I get.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, don't mention old.
What?
Well, Howard, you played at the Bonafide Blues Festival, didn't you?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, you got a chance to get out there and work, and it was with the High Rhythm Section, wasn't it?
Yes.
Wow. I bet that's still a thrill, though, just to sit back behind that kit and work with those guys again.
You know, it's always an honor to work with them. Working with Hubby, with the Bow Keys, I get an opportunity sometime with Leroy, you know, and it's always that chemistry when Leroy and I connects, and we've never lost that. I've had the pleasure. We just did a recording session for a guy out of Pensacola, Florida, named Ernest Stanberry.
Mm-hmm.
And Leroy and I just clicked. We just locked in, you know, just like old with Willie. And it's always a great feeling, you know, to be with him, you know. And he plays with Earl Pearl, and then he got his own thing at BB's, you know. Mm-hmm. So, it's an honor. Maybe I may get a chance to work back with the whole group again.
Well, you never know. What roads open up for you. You know,
we truly been blessed.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Bonafide Blues Festival, what did you think of that experience? I know they had to move you guys inside, right? Or they had to shovel the schedule on you there at the end because of the rain.
Well, I like being on the inside. It was great. One of the best festivals I had ever played, you know, cool. With the sound. And the audience was just tremendous. It was wonderful, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of the local artists really just enjoyed being able to go home, sleep in their bed after playing at a festival. Yeah. You know?
Well,
where was I?
Yeah. Me too. We're going to talk about the 2016 Bonafide Blues Festival. Right. You missed.
Yes, I think we need to have you here.
Please think about us as well.
Oh, heck yeah. that was kind of one of the bigger things that I've seen come around a long time. And to Rick's point about Memphis music kind of getting back on the map, I mean, it's. It's like that LL Cool J song, you know, don't call it a comeback. We've been here for years. Yeah. It's not.
Yeah. We never really went away.
Yeah, never really went away.
There may have been a bushel basket over the light, but, you know, but now it's coming back. Sometimes that happens there for a while. And, you know, since I've been here, we've seen a ton of musicians and acts, and they come and they go. I mean, it's probably no different than the way it was back when you guys were playing as much as you were and seeing musicians come and go. There were some that seemed like they had promise, and for whatever reason, the thing fell apart, or, you know, life circumstances get in the way and cause problems.
Yeah. And you have to be dedicated to it, man. You have to endure. Like, Tony, I can't speak on it enough, but how much she's endured being a female in this industry. And it's sad to say about the jealousies and the pettiness that exist. And there's another thing about Willie Mitchell that didn't never exist. You know, Stacks and High Records.
Right.
Willie was open, man. He let Stacks use his studio, you know, when things were down at Stacks. You know, he was that kind of person.
Sure.
You know, he let people come in, and it wasn't no thing. It wasn't no jealousy, no envy, and none of that. You know, just make the music. Make the best music you can. If I can help you, I will. If you can help me, you know. And
Willie Mitchell, if he was interested in you, had to sing, because he'd make you sing.
That's right. Yeah.
Even if you didn't
sing.
He'd
make you mad.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was get it out of here, because he knew what's inside.
That was his thing, boy.
You would think you had it, and yeah, I'm through with it. And he's no. We'd be here all night long.
Yeah.
You can get mad at me if you want to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, we're going to be here.
But we're going to squeeze that good record out of you. We're going to get that good track out of you at some point.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to share a little story about
Willie.
Boy,
he'd have been pissed at me. He's going to give me the sick.
I'm going to share a little story about Willie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Al Green, the session we did with Love and Happiness. I think I shared it. I don't know if I did or not. I told a story about Al Jackson. He had told me Al Jackson had stayed mad at him for about 2 years. He said Al Jackson asked me this before he shared this with me before he passed. He said Al Jackson asked him, said, Willie, said, why you take me off the kid and put Howard on? He said, well, you was playing the damn record too damn pretty. I didn't want it. He said, I wanted fucking. He said, and Howard, that's his trade. That's the reason why I put him on the drums. So when we did Love and Happiness, nobody never heard the Long Virgin. It's a long virgin because we got locked in Love and Happiness and couldn't come out.
Really?
Oh, yeah, got into the groove.
We got locked in and couldn't come out, but Willie had the track.
Really?
And Willie just walked out the control room and walked out on the floor, and he was out there dancing. And we were still locked in playing, so we couldn't turn it loose.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Willie said, y'all just go on and play. Play that you get tired.
Yeah.
Because I got to now, you know.
Yeah.
So that was really something that's very exciting
to hear
to see him. You know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Me too.
So it's a long virgin.
Yeah.
So right then and there, you caught a little magic that was happening in that room, and it sounds like Willie was one of the guys that could just kind of create that.
Yes.
You know, which
absolutely.
Is usually you have to kind of rely on divine intervention.
Well,
of
I
some sort,
see,
you know.
Totally how you get locked into that groove on that track, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was such a, you know, Willie Mitchell was a master.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's a master. He's one of the greatest engineers and producer and writers. You know, I learned so much from him, you know, because, I mean, he just, it was no way around, you know, if you could play, you could work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't play, he'd tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Go back and come back 6 months,
yeah.
2 years from now. It's just the way he was.
Yeah. It's amazing, man.
He was amazing. For me, he was bigger than life because he gave those who had potential, you know, futuristic talents, he could see all of that. And yes, he would piss you off.
Yes.
He'd make you really mad.
Yeah.
Because he told me I was singing flat.
Yeah.
Girl, you're singing flat. And I'm like, I'm questioning my.
Yeah.
I'm singing flat to myself.
I'm
not,
you know. I'm a
professional.
I'm flat.
You know.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that to him, but I'm like, I'm in the studio like, you're saying I am flat. I know I'm not flat. Girl, can you sing on key? Can you get your toes? You know, milk the cow with the dress on. I'm going like, what is he talking about? Because he have all those little slangs, you know. I'm like, what is he? I'm a kid. I don't know what you're talking about, you know. And so I finally got it, you know.
What was it?
I was not singing flat. He wanted me to sing better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And the only way to get that little cute thing out
That's
of me was to make me get that thing that was inside of me to
right.
come out so that he could hear the other potential things that I didn't know I had.
Right.
So the only way to get it out of you, he had to tell you something.
You're right.
or we were going to be there all day and we weren't going to get it, you know. And I'm like, I'm so mad at this man. I'm telling you, I took my shoes off, my earrings off. I'm mad. I'm hot. But by that time, I was ready to sing.
You know, when the earrings come off,
yeah.
She's
like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
When the earrings come off, that's it.
And the shoes, you know. Yeah,
look out now.
So by that time, I'm ready to sing because I'm singing. I'm, you know, I'm there.
Because you're pissed off.
I'm pissed.
Yeah.
You know, so everything in you, you warm, you're going to give it to him, you know, or you're not going to give it to him, whichever may. But fortunately for me, he knew how to bring it out, yes, like he so. Knows how to bring it out. But he had such an ear.
Yeah.
Because he was the only person I know had stayed in the pocket and taught me to this day to stay in the pocket. And I have a problem with bands right now when they are not in the pocket, you know, in that groove.
Yes.
If you're not in the groove, I'm ticked. I'm messed up with it.
And see, for you, this has got to be a very unusual situation because across the pond, you're
yes.
dealing with a bunch of Frenchmen over there
yes.
who do have the sound. They're
yes.
very good.
Yes.
But when they slip out of the pocket a little bit,
I'm like,
and they don't know how to handle that.
Oh, I'm Jackie Brown to them. I'm telling you, they know not to cross that line, and they know to keep that in the pocket. And I'm like, you know, and they're saying, "Oh my, we've never seen anybody with so much strength and so much." But I got it from Willie.
Passion. Yeah.
I got it from my cousin John Gary because see, they were over me. I was this kid, and so they made me get that thing.
You
as
had
a female,
it all the time.
You know.
You had it all the time.
But see, the pocket, the secret was the pocket.
The pocket.
Willie taught me the pocket.
Yes. Yes. Taught us all.
When I was playing early out there with Ben Branch and the Lagos, everything was up.
Mm-hmm.
Running all the time.
Yeah.
So I was free. You could pretty much do anything you want because everybody was. But when I came to Willie, try his band out, I didn't think I was going to make the band, but he tested me on the song, and I took off the running. And he stopped. He said, oh. He said, hey, what the hell are you doing? Just like that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, wait a minute. He said, we're going to all get there at the same time.
Yeah.
He said, slow down.
Yeah.
Just slow down.
Yeah.
He said, now, here's where I wanted it. And he set the time.
Yeah.
And it was so relaxed. I felt him.
Yes.
I felt him. And when he set that time and it hit and we went into that, it was so comfortable and relaxed to me.
Yeah.
Until I handled it so well and I didn't know he was paying that much attention to me.
Mm-hmm.
But he was setting time for me on sessions and on his shows that
yes.
we played.
Yes.
Until I caught on what the pocket.
Like
the
was.
Pocket yeah. was, he never wanted you to, excuse me, he never wanted you to be busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Always told me, I don't want all that fancy, flap this, that. He said, just put it in the pocket
lock
and let it sit there and look stupid.
Yeah. That's right.
Huh. Just play. He said, get in and out the little loopholes, but stay in that pocket.
In the pocket.
So I knew how to get in and get out
mm-hmm.
and stay there. It was the greatest drumming I had ever learned in my life from him.
Well, how did he make the pocket work? I mean, I understand where you're coming from as a drummer, but you're also dealing with the bassist, right? Now, that bass player, he's watching you, or you watching him, or how's that working?
Yeah, well, it was the bass and the drums.
Mm-hmm.
Because
so he got the same
the
lecture.
Bass drum bounced
mm-hmm.
off.
The drum.
The bass drum bounced off. The bass.
Right.
See,
Leroy's playing the bottom, and all I had to do was just keep that straight.
Keep that foot
and maybe
going.
Maybe sometime do a double tom, you know what I mean? A double on the bass, like a two. But stay there.
Right.
With this. That's it right there.
That's
what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's the way it was.
Simple.
And,
nothing fancy, nothing.
Simple. Just simple.
Very simple.
Let me ask you guys, Tony. And how, as a vocalist, I would pat my feet. You know, listen to the music. I would
mm-hmm.
pat my feet.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "No, man. No, how you gonna feel anything? You patting your feet."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "You got to rock."
Yeah,
absolutely.
Said, really?
So you kind of sway a little bit.
He said, "You got to rock with it. That's where you can feel the pocket."
Oh my God, it's crazy.
You remember?
Did he tell you that?
I'm still rocking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a habit. When I get on stage, I'm like,
You call it
electric rocking chair.
I'm rocking.
Yeah.
I've seen the video of video of you, and
I'm rocking. And when you see me doing that,
it's not a dance.
No, it's not. It's like I'm in that thing,
and it's like you're letting it carry you a little bit.
Yeah. Hello.
As laypersons, just try it.
Oh my God.
When you put on the record,
that makes
it's natural thing.
Just kind of rock with it a little bit,
like when I tap my feet. But the best advice I ever had on bass, and it was in a recording session, the engineer came and says, "Look, man, you're not in the pocket. So look, if you're wiggling to it, then you're in the pocket." So when I play bass, I tend to get into it a little bit.
But that's the first time I've ever heard that. Yeah,
it's
a natural. But you're also showing emotion to your audience.
Yeah,
because they're getting into where you at.
Right.
With that. That way, they get in the pocket with you.
So rock instead of tap.
As a vocalist, you know, I could hear instruments.
Yeah,
I could hear everything.
Absolutely.
Once I stopped patting my foot and getting in the way.
Get your feet out of the way, and then now it's all coming through.
Rock and you can hear everything: the bass, the lead guitar, the keyboard, strings. You know, and it's right there. You can tell if it's not there. You'll feel it. You know, you'll miss something. Wait a minute. You know, you'll start leaning.
You have to regroup
and start over again. Yeah.
It sounded like Willie also not only brought out you as a musician, but he also brought out the showman
and
the entertainer is. Because if you're interacting with your audience, then all of a sudden everything is working out.
Everything.
Yeah. He was a teacher, man.
Comes on out.
He was a teacher.
What a great guy! I wish I'd have met him. I would have loved him.
This is probably a stupid question. Did he play it? Was he an instrumentalist? Did he have a
trumpet player?
Trumpet player. And keyboards.
Yeah, he played piano.
Yeah.
I first came to the band. I got in the band in '68.
Oh. And it was in '68. Soul Serenade.
First recording hit on him.
Who else is on that track? Do you remember?
Archie Turner playing piano. Charles Hodges.
Charles Hodges. Yeah.
Teeny Hodges playing lead guitar. And Leroy Hodges. Charles Charman is playing the tenor, lead soloist on it, and Sandy Donna Rose Charman.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, that's the backup singers.
All
that people didn't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
White group.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, they were.
Huh. Yeah, Papa didn't form up until the last day.
He wanted
he
nobody
used those
to know
girls.
Him.
Yeah.
Wow.
So all that stuff you hear, that's Rose Charman and them, Charles. Because Charles was really one of the original Memphis Horns. He stopped playing and he married Donna Rose. And she played acoustic and electric guitar on some of the tracks.
Wow. A lot of history in you, boy.
And he's not that old. No, he's not.
I think I got him by a couple of years.
Wow.
Sitting here with Miss Tony Green, Mr. Howard Grimes, and John Gary Williams. We've been spending a lot of time talking about Willie Mitchell and his impact on the scene here, and how these artists in here, their remembrances of working with Willie, and all the things that you guys had learned over the years, and you know, learning how to be an entertainer, learning how to be the best musician you can possibly be, and how that has stuck with you to this day. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Did three of you ever work together on anything? Is that a stupid question? Yeah. Like most everything?
I don't know. John's already asking about the studio over here. I think he's got something going over here.
But Tony and I, you know, we're related. We're cousins. And they had a hell of a group.
Yeah.
It was like Gladys Knight and the Pips with Tony leading and three dudes. And they could sing and dance. And I'm saying, man, I didn't know you had that kind of talent. You know, and that's why I mentioned earlier about the road that she had to travel to get to where she is today.
Right.
You know, because Stax had the opportunity to record her when she was, 16, 17 years old?
15, 16.
You know, they may have passed because, you know, young artists, they didn't want to, you know, have to be chaperoned or whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to justify it. but it was a loss for our city.
Yeah.
And the world.
Yeah.
And then I got to also say that everything happens in time and on time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because she's more seasoned now. She's ready for the world.
Right.
And she earned it. She didn't, it wasn't given to her. Mm-hmm. And so, well, she was John Gary's cousin, or she, no, she earned it on Tony Green.
Yeah.
And, thank you, John.
That's,
I paid
that's
him.
So rewarding. That's so rewarding.
I'll hope you got enough money later to get home.
But what he didn't say is that I followed them as a young kid when I was very young, earlier than 16 and 15 and 14, 13.
Right.
They were the groups. He, the Mad Lads, there was a gospel group across the street who were the Jones Boys. Mm-hmm. There was also my other cousin who was in a group called the Knights. So I had all of these people that I was following. I was this little girl. Now, they probably got tired of me because I was really trying to learn, because at that time they were singing a cappella.
Yeah.
And to sing a cappella means that you know what you're doing.
Can't be flat.
Can't be flat. You can't be sharp. You got to be on cue and on point. Yeah. And I learned from them. You know, and Gary, as my other cousin, kind of, you know, kind of let the things go from, you know, getting married and whatever. I still hung on to them and would follow them wherever they would go. And it was so inspirational because he never said, you know, like, get away and leave us alone, you know. And he was always teaching me and helping me and showing me the right things to do. And then I became this little tough person, you know.
Right.
Which was really good for me. So I had great teachers, great inspiration. Then, of course, with Howard, they were the first, you know, professional band that I was around, because they did my first single.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the whole band. So how great can that be? Wow. You know,
you got spoiled early on, didn't you?
I really didn't get spoiled.
Really?
I really
didn't. You understood the gravity of it at that point, you think?
I really had it because I had my cousins, and all of these guys were older than me. So either I had to step up to the thing to be, you know, or get left behind. And I refused to. I think I was the only one who was crazy enough to still hang on to, I wanted to be a singer and an entertainer, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We wanted you to know all aspects of it. And being a female, we knew it was going to be difficult.
Yeah.
You know,
it still is. It still is.
Come try to take advantage of you.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of.
Honey, man, it don't go.
But it's probably not as bad in Europe as it is here.
It's bad.
Is really?
Come on, they lay that accent on. It actually probably makes it harder, you know.
She just falling right
Tony,
for
you are so beautiful.
I'm falling for it. Yeah. I don't fall for it.
Tony Green, you're so beautiful.
They say it all the time.
Let me take you to my chateau.
Yes.
We will drink wine and eat baguette.
They say all of that, but you know what they say? The Italians say this about me, which is really fabulous. Tony, you're thinking like a man because you are so stronger. You're beautiful, you're gorgeous, you're everything that a man wants. Tony, do you have a man? No. Tony will not talk to anybody because Tony wants her money. Absolutely correct.
Absolutely correct.
So they know we must pay Tony.
That line has been drawn. That's where that
Tony wants the money. Tony has already counted her money. Give her money.
Well, yes.
Yes.
Amen.
So I've established that.
Well, you know, Tony, she was such a great singer at her age at that time. Aretha Franklin, you know, she was singing blues.
Oh, yeah.
And she reminded me so much of Don Bryant's sister, Tina Bryant.
Yeah.
Well, I thought she reminded me of...
those were the two females at the time that I knew, because working with her and Tina.
Aretha,
Yeah.
You worked with Aretha too, didn't you?
No, I never got a chance.
You did?
I was on the show.
Yeah.
I did the Al Green. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played Symphony Hall with Al Green with Aretha Franklin.
Oh.
You know. Well, I thought Tony reminded me of Gladys Knight. Mm-hmm. You know, and I used to fuss because I didn't want to do blues. I said, man, blues singers ain't going to never be able to do Vegas, Tony. You know, I wanted to put in that Gladys Knight thing, but she's so competitive. She wanted to show everybody that whatever you're doing, I can do it better.
You know? Right.
And I just had to let her go. Just go for it.
I want to say this because I didn't get a chance when you asked about who had work.
Right.
I had the pleasure to work with his group out to the Shell, the Symphony.
Really?
Wow. And that was a great experience because I hadn't worked with this gentleman since I had cut his record. Mm-hmm. And it was a long time.
Oh, man.
So I had that honor.
Wow.
To play with this group. Aww. And then I had a second chance and played at Stax over there in the back. So to me, that was a great experience seeing him again and working.
And was this, when was this recently?
This time? Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, a couple of years.
But the honor, man, the honor has been for me. I've been able to work with two of the best drummers in the world, Al Jackson Jr. and Howard Grimes.
That's it.
Can't get no better.
Does that make you hard on drummers now when you gotta get one?
No, it just make you appreciate them more.
Why can't you be more like Howard?
Yeah.
And that's what the great thing about this music community is, that we've had a chance to be with the greatest, with the great Howard Grimes. You can't get any better. You know, Howard was about his business. I remember as a kid looking at him, and Howard would come in straight face. I used to think he was the meanest guy in the world. I really did, because he wouldn't, you know, he wouldn't smile. Now, Leroy and Teeny would smile, and you know what I'm saying. But this one right here, he would come in straight face. He knew what he wanted to do.
He's got a great smile. He's smiling right now.
Yeah, but right now.
Because you're sitting next to him.
Yeah, okay. I've grown up a little bit. I was a little girl then. But he was like so about his business until he would come in and whatever. And he would look around and look at us. And I'm like looking at him because, you know, I wasn't scared. You know, and he would just straight face and do his little stuff. And then he'd go. I'm like, who is he? Yeah. You know,
it's another day at the office. That's what that was.
But he was so on point with his stuff, and I loved it.
Excuse me, it was the way Willie Mitchell had
groomed you.
Had groomed you,
you know.
Yeah.
And I was always in focus for whoever I worked with.
Yeah.
I had to be on cue and all in touch, because I had to be ready for listening at them or whatever it is that they're getting ready to do. So I couldn't do what Teeny and all of them did. They kick it. Willie had me always. I had to be. That's the way he trained me.
But everything really depended on you a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know. And you could see it, because he was so serious. I remember him in a flashback of going back when he would come into the studio, the old studio, and he would just be so, you know, adamant about, I've got to do this. I'm going to do this, and I'll holler at y'all later. And we loved it. But, you know, because I could see past that little thing that he had. I'm like, he ain't all that tough.
To myself, he ain't all that tough.
But he was so on point, and what a blessing it was for me to have him to play on my first CD and some other adventures that we had. And, I mean, I've just been blessed with all these great guys.
Well, just to be a professional gunslinger, session drummer like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's called what it is, a world-class professional drummer at the top of his game at the time. I would imagine that, because did you often know, like, hey, tomorrow I'm going to record with Tony, next week we're doing this, or did you just come in this hour, we're playing with so-and-so, and you just had to figure it out then and there?
I never knew. Willie never let us know who he's going to record. He just said, tomorrow is the session.
So you just had to come in ready to play, ready to recharge,
always
get going.
Was ready, because we wanted to make the best of the artists. That's the way Willie trained us.
Right.
And it was all about getting hits. So we wanted to give them hits. Mm-hmm. And he stayed on me mostly, that he concentrated on, because the way that I tuned the drums.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember that conversation. Yeah, that was a secret there. Yeah, tuning the drums.
He bring me in a day before.
Yeah.
And we'd work all day until he heard the sound he wanted. Mm. And then Leroy just blend in, when, you know, when they come in. But the key was the drums and the bass.
Yeah.
So in the studio, and you're working, you're laying your tracks down, the music is still being composed at that point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You had a kind of rough idea going in, but by the time you finished that end of the day, you had no idea where you were headed, right? Yeah.
No.
Absolutely.
Very organic, if you will. Yeah, it just kind of grew as it went under your feet.
Well, see, what I did, I never did bother the artists that I recorded. I'd listen at them, because the guys would be working the songs up.
Right.
Right.
So I'd be listening at the story.
Mm.
And I never got in the way because Willie be sitting there listening in the control room.
Right.
So he knew, and I knew what he was listening at, the way he had trained me. So when they pretty much felt like they had it, then Willie would say, well, how we get on the drums? They wanted to see what I was going to do. I already had it in my mind from hearing it so much. You know?
Right, right.
So it all came together when I started playing because I could hear the rhythm from the artist that was singing, and I knew what to play from the pattern that Charles, Teeny, and Leroy was playing. That's the reason I come up with so many different types of patterns. There was a certain sure. way that they played. And Willie Mitchell used to always be a trumpet player. Jazz, he thought like a drummer. And yeah. he used to tell me things all the time. He would hear like a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, so I wanted to try to figure out how to give him what he was hearing from his trumpet. And that's how all them different patterns come
wow.
up.
Wow.
That's something.
It wasn't just simple, say, Howard, give me a shuffle beat here. Uh-uh. It was. I'm looking for, you know, wow, and he would imitate it as best he could.
Imitate.
Wow.
Yeah. That was amazing. First time
that
he did
amazing.
That, it just, you know, and he knew so much about drums, you know. Well, he had already worked with Al Jackson way before me because he had told me that he used to stay up all night with Al working with patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So,
just really driving it home so he understood how to do it.
Right.
On command.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because, and that's the thing, you guys were making music where each song was its own individual song. It didn't sound the same. You know, you hear an artist now and it's like you've heard every record. But there was the really balance of the creativity that was coming out, and he just knew how to, you know, really coach that out. And
absolutely.
That's magical to me.
He told a story. The story is Howard is saying that he listened as Teeny and Leroy and the rest of them were, and Charles were probably getting the other parts together. And the story had to be told. They're building a thing. It's almost like planting a seed.
Right.
And
absolutely.
You don't know where the branch is going to go over here or there, but it all comes together as one plant.
Mm-hmm.
And so Willie had this thing of how he was sitting back and orchestrating it without
right.
orchestrating it.
Right.
And that's how it was back then. Mm-hmm. It's not like that anymore.
Oh, God, no.
And we're kind of lost, and we're kind of the people who are saying, we want and hope that they will try and take, you know, a listen to what was given to them to at least have a foundation. But I think, in a way, without the Memphis sound, and I don't know what we're going to do to try to bring all of that back, but we need to pull it together through what you're doing here tonight to take it on to the next level. That's my opinion. You know?
I agree. And that's we all of us here at the station, we struggle with that every day. And
yeah.
and that's why we, you know, it's so easy for us to just reach out to the youngsters because they're everywhere. And we say, come on, and we do that. But at the same time, it's important to me personally that the artist that really built this brick by brick by brick over the years,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, because it, one of the thoughts that keep rattling in my head, and you guys were working at a time in this city when it was very difficult with everything. The environment was so screwed up. 68, Dr. King,
yeah.
right here in the middle of all that. Stax is trying to create stuff. You guys are in the middle of this, and the trying to be creative in a very difficult environment is special. And you guys did it. And
uh-huh.
but that had those things had to have shaped your music too. I mean, this
absolutely.
Was a rough town back then. I mean,
oh, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
but it also could have been used as a mechanism to express the times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you
yeah.
know,
absolutely.
Like, this song, I wrote a song called "I Believe the Whole Damn World Going Crazy."
Great,
it
great.
Came from that period.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, on that same album, I had a song that Carl Smith and I wrote called "I See Hope."
Mm-hmm.
Great record.
You know,
both of them.
And some people saw it as a conflict, but it wasn't. It was just a product of the time. Like you say, it was difficult.
Well, you could feel both of those things at the
yeah,
same time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're trying to express your feelings about
right.
what was going on around you in a way that was safe, in
yeah.
a way that maybe other people can relate to and help ease those pains, I would think.
I got a question
right.
for you guys.
Right.
Yeah.
With your new studio, how is technology going to come into play opposed to how we did things then?
It's a little different these days.
Gosh, yeah,
it's a little different. Yeah, we'll take a break and I'll give you a tour over here in a little bit. It's still in disarray. It's partly in boxes, but we can show you what we're doing. But you know, it's.
Tape's gone.
Tape's gone.
I'm still trying to adjust to that, like in Pro Tools and just the idea that you've almost gotten
a computer does so much now.
It almost makes you lazy in the studio.
Yeah.
In fact, it does. It makes a lot of people lazy in the studio because it's digital. You know, we're not burning tape here. It's not costing money. Mm-hmm. It's so. Because I was trained, you know, I studied music. I was taught to you go to a recording studio and time is money. We ain't got time to screw around. You know, you got to land on your track. If you mess it up, we got a recording studio that's more tape. So it does, I think it does make artists slack a little bit. And I don't know if that's a bad thing. I don't know if it's a good thing.
Well, I can say for myself, I'm still doing what the basic was.
Yeah.
So I hadn't lost anything.
Well, that's what I was trying to get to.
The real deal is still there where I'm at with Scott Beaumont.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
He do use the computer, but we still cut the way it was at Stax and High.
Right.
And
well, that's because you guys were trained pros doing it, though.
But you know, the secret also, what we were speaking earlier about, between the sound that Memphis had contributed and was given to the world, the two companies, they used the same musicians. We knew how to
play. Right. And you wouldn't know it.
We knew how to play and stay out of each other's way.
Right.
Whatever we did at Stax, we wouldn't go to High and play the same way and it was with the artists too, because of the material they was doing.
Yeah.
So you had a way of the approach. The music,
you know.
Because it was such great stories they was doing and singing, both you know. Ways.
Well, you know that, and that I think you bring
and
you,
that, y'all. That makes a lot of difference. The reason why people was confused about who was doing what, because I know he asked me many times.
Yeah,
was Al Jackson on this?
Right.
But Willie had a way that he cut Al and he cut me. Him. That's the way it was.
But. What's interesting to me is there was this time in the music industry, 60s and 70s, where you had these artist labels that had like a house band that would back an artist like that. I mean, that's you don't hear about that now. I mean, like Motown had the Funk Brothers.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You heard about the Wrecking Crew, but like that whole way of doing things kind of went away.
Well, see, going back to what John said earlier about Willie at Manhattan Club.
Yeah.
See, Willie had already created a sound.
Mm-hmm.
Willie Mitchell and Don Bryant, the Four Kings.
Right.
He had one of the most beautiful sounds of music you ever could hear, because I heard George Klein said one day on the radio, he was talking about when Elvis Presley used to come down to the Manhattan.
Yeah.
And he used to come down on his birthday. And he didn't know about Willie, and he said... George said that Elvis said, you know, asked him, said, well, what kind of band he got down? He said, man, he got a band down there, Willie Mitchell band. Said they sound like he come out of heaven, man. Hearing George say that on the radio, I knew that. And it was Willie Mitchell, that band was so tight.
So tight.
And I mean, everything was just, Willie never was loud, he was mellow. Because I used to go by and holler at Al Jackson. You could go in the side door right there, you know. Stand. I used to go in the side door. Al be sitting right at the door. You know that, John.
I think that's kind of where Elvis would. He'd hang at that side door, too. They threw him out.
Yeah.
You know, but, John, to answer your question, you know, nowadays artists, when they book in their record time, you know, in their studio time, it's highly, and you know this, Tony, it's highly recommended that they come in polished and rehearsed enough to come in and lay it down and go. So the days of the fluid organic stuff are not there per se, but with a room like what we have here, I think it would be fine to give that a go.
the intimacy.
Yeah, yeah. To where it's isolated, it's close, and let's start and build, and let's see where it goes. You know, I'm not a songwriter by any means.
We need a Radio Memphis house band. We need like a studio band.
Well, and I would like to be able to have a Rolodex, if you will, of session,
musicians,
and say, look, you know, you need a drummer, we go here. You need a bass player, you go here. You know, whatever it is that you're looking for, this is what we have, and this is their rate. You know, and because it is a business. Mm-hmm. As difficult as it may be, but at the same time, it should be a pleasant experience for everybody involved, because the end result is what you hope to, and it'll certainly air here, but to get it out there as far out as you possibly
keep
can.
Keep in mind that it is a business.
Absolutely.
Would you consider at any time passing up the technology on a particular project, you know, opposed to using the technology, use the old way?
Oh, I would in a heartbeat if I could get my hands on the gear.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me say this. Yeah. Overseas, these guys are so particular about what Stax and High has already done.
Yeah.
Until they've taken it back, we recorded on my last on the CD that I've given to you guys to play, a Malted Milk Tony Green. That was done, you know, with all some of the Pro Tools and some of those things.
Mm. Sure.
But they went back. Mm-hmm. To have it done in England, from France to England, to put it on the vinyl.
Yeah.
So that it can give that better sound, because the vinyl has a better sound.
It does.
Than the CDs. Mm-hmm. So retrospectively, we probably would get a better thing if we can get that kind of stuff, because that's who we are. We're the vinyl people.
Right.
We're the vinyl people.
I grew up with it, yeah.
Because it's going to give you that thing. And I believe that if it's given the opportunity once again, to be pronounced, produced, or whatever, it'll be great.
Mm-hmm. Vinyl is back.
Vinyl is back. You guys remember Columbia House, the ads, you know, ten records for a penny, and then they'd hook you into the long-term credit.
Yeah, exactly.
They're coming back. They went into bankruptcy. Some company bought them out, and now they're coming back as Columbia House Records, and they're going to do the same thing again, but they're pushing vinyl.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Instead of 8-tracks and cassettes and CDs, they're doing the vinyl thing.
And we're really, you know, overseas, once again, I've got to stress this point. What we've done right here in Memphis, Tennessee, is so... let me tell you, these people love what we've done. Now we need to love what we've done.
Yes,
exactly.
Okay.
Yes.
Well,
absolutely.
Well,
yeah.
They love us. I mean, and they love everything. I mean, they know everybody. What you've done. They know you, Howard. Mm. They know you, and they know what you've done. They know the Mad Lads. They know everybody. The William Bells. The Isaac Hayes. Everybody. They're trying to keep this thing alive.
Yes.
And if we, you know, as I post, somebody posted the other day, talking about what are we gonna do. Because let me just say this and be real about this thing.
Absolutely.
We need to stop hating on each other and build each other and give each other and stop dividing the thing and give each other the opportunity to be who we are as the great musicians, singers, entertainers, producers, writers that we have shown to the world.
Right.
The world knows us as the greatest people in the world as far as music is concerned. You say Memphis, everybody wants to, oh, you're from Memphis? I know such and such and such. But we as Memphians need to make sure that we bind this thing as one and had come up with what we needed to be some years ago that got cut off. Yeah. When the industry went the other way.
To take the greed out of it, man, and put the need back in it.
Hey, come on now.
Yeah, there you go.
One of our biggest mistakes is we don't have the musicians that we used to have. They're gone.
Why is that?
We're the only ones left here. Mm-hmm. And we're to teach the young, but if you can't train a horse to walk through the trough.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Yeah.
These kids today that consider themselves as playing and musicians, they didn't come up the way we did.
Right.
You know, they learned a little something and they played and once they got that, you know, and the young girl playing, you know,
you can't blame
that's
them.
The problem.
You can't blame
them.
Well, they didn't have the
technology.
Infrastructure
is what did it, man. The technology is what stopped them from learning, you know, and made no more use for musicians such as Howard. You know,
and Stax is gone.
Yeah, and they're going to take the technology. The kids going to take the technology and run with it. You know, and as long as they can keep turning out records and CDs like a factory.
Right.
You know, I can't tell one artist from the next.
The idea of Memphis as an industry town that had venues and showcases and
Thank you. And
not just that, but had studios and labels where you had
seasoned
veterans bringing up the young folk and bringing them to an infrastructure where there was a system, so to speak. Like, all that kind of went away. We're in the post-apocalyptic version of that.
That's true.
But no, there's a renaissance there, though.
No, there is. I'm not dogging Memphis.
I feel you.
We need that in order for Memphis to celebrate its God-given birthright.
Yeah.
No other location on the planet has what we have.
No.
We've got to all welcome it and cherish it and figure out how to make that work for everybody.
You know, like go to shows and stuff.
I'm going to let you in on something. I'm going to tell you a little secret. You see, the basic thing is when I was coming up, the artists and the people that I came under, like Fontella Bass, Lloyd Price, Marv Johnson, all these people I was playing behind, that was the music. I played that music with them, not recording them, but Starlight Review, Good Review, and all of that. So that was the basically initial music. And we were into instrumental music when I was at Satellite with Chip's Mama.
Oh, yeah.
When we established the sound, then they start putting vocalists behind it. Everything prospered and grew up until Stax developed. You had Motown.
Developed.
You had Atlantic.
The record industry, the recording
Muscle
industry.
Shows,
yeah.
Fame, you know. Okay, we had all of this great music, but somewhere down the line, it fell apart. And musicians don't know how to go back.
Right.
See, the secret to go back is when I learned more with Willie Mitchell when I came over. I learned a little something when I was with Ben Branch, Low Reese and them, because it's records.
Right.
Willie Mitchell was the key. Because when I came to Willie Mitchell, how we created all them sounds in them records, it was records that them artists came in, knew what they wanted to sing. And you know what they was doing? They was doing all them old cats back in time. We rearranged it and played it. And the songwriters that was writing during that time. And that's what is missing. Musicians do not know how far back to go. Scott and I is already talking about it. I got four boxes of 45s sitting on my back porch. Music that you wouldn't believe.
We need to get you a jukebox. I'm going to come over with a couple of rolls of quarters and hang out at your house.
Something.
I tell you what, I'd love to hear that stuff.
But this is how I found it out. Willie Mitchell was always getting those records. He got those records. And I remember those records.
Yeah.
And he would sit down, and we knew how to transport them records.
But here you go, right there.
That
they
was
don't,
the key.
They don't know how to transport because they're not. See, there's no discipline ship. You have to be disciplined already to have an imagination to make a thing better.
Yeah.
The most of the children of the kids now do not have an imagination to take some of those things and do that without some instruction or discipline.
Well, nobody's teaching me.
That's what that's
time.
That's the key.
See, that's the mistake.
It's not that there's no teachers.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to listen. To want. Mm-hmm. See, there's no, everybody wants instantaneous success.
Where's my cut?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, where's
there's
mine?
No,
where's
there's
mine?
No, yeah. There's no working to get that and going to,
paying
you,
the dues.
As we talked about singing, playing for $25 a night.
Yeah.
Who do you know today gonna play for $25 or discipline to get there? Everybody wants to be an instant star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what we have, honestly, just to take you back, what you're saying, Howard, is true, but I want to take you back further to say, if you don't have the desire, the discipline, heart, and soul to do it, it ain't going to work. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you
That's
bring.
Right, yeah.
I don't care what you bring, y'all.
I want to agree to disagree with Howard.
Yeah.
You know. No, really. You know, you mentioned about going back and getting the old music.
It's true.
You know what I'm saying? I agree with you, but the way to go about doing it, R. Kelly, this youngster.
Jackie Wilson.
He took Sam Cooke, Jackie Wilson, and all the greats. And that youngster put it together and brought it up to date. He made me feel like I was listening to Jackie Wilson.
Absolutely, that's right.
But it was up to date. He was right there in the pocket. And see, that's what we need more of.
That's what I'm talking about.
I felt you.
But they got to want
it. That's the truth.
They got to have that passion.
You got to have that passion. It's got to be in there. R. Kelly has it.
They got it.
There are a few who are out there who want and will do. You got, not Genuine, but some of those other young people. They know how to. Tyrese, baby. Tyrese is one, and who else is another? Tank, all of those. It's a lot of great artists out there who want to really put that thing in the pocket, keep it there with that groove. But then there are a lot of, then the industry.
The business part of it.
See, we got to also be able to have those people in the industry who really want that to go. Because if you advertise this purified drinking water all the time, we'll drink it.
That's right.
All the time.
Sure.
But if you're not advertising it all the time, we're not going to drink it.
Yes.
We're going to go for Rolling Rock.
Okay. Okay.
Fruit, but still.
You understand?
Yeah, I hear you.
But it is what it is.
Let's bring in you guys.
Yeah.
We were on a show. Well, I was listening. Tony was on the show, and this one guy, I don't call his name, but
well, you can.
He said that, you know, why can't the public call in and request a song and have it played.
Uh-huh.
Oh, he went off.
There are some in this very room who would agree that that's how radio was meant to be.
You know, and that's what you guys got a chance to change, man.
Well, that's what we did. And that's what we did. You know, I spent, you know, 30 years in this business.
Yeah.
I spent 14 of it here in Memphis at Clear Channel, at Rock 103, and watched as they systematically pulled the FM radio business apart, and they're still doing it.
Now radio's dead.
And it is dead.
It is dead.
But it opened up this fantastic door with, thanks to the modern technology of the internet, we can now put on a show like this. We can play this music and put it into the heads of literally anybody with a connection to the web, and that's around the world.
Yeah,
you know.
But that's a blessing that came out of it. But you know, it's ridiculous, man. When you know, it was a time when it was a make it or break it.
Yeah,
you know, you'd play a record from
a
young artist from Memphis or wherever, Arkansas, and say, "Okay, audience, make it or break it."
Yeah,
and they play the record. You call in, you say, "Well,
you got your vote." Yeah,
you know, or you'd say, "Hey, I want to hear Tony Green record."
Yeah,
and then I got a program that record. We don't do that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
See, I think part of it, though, I think music doesn't mean to people what it used to
mean.
It's such a quick hit now. It's such a quick fix.
Yeah.
No one's buying albums anymore. They're all buying singles. You know.
You know the reason why it's like that? You see, artists knew what they wanted to do.
Right.
In the day, they brought the stuff that they wanted to record. They laid it out for us to record it. That's what we don't have.
Yes.
We believe that you got to give the people what they want.
The artists.
Yeah.
You know, we believe
that. Like you said, I want a hit record.
That's the reason why we got here. We did what they wanted.
Yeah.
They laid it out to us and we learned it. That's the way it went. That's the way it still go today with us over
there. But you all reshaped it.
Because.
Yeah.
See, yeah, we recreated it.
You filtered it through a professional team of.
That's the way you get it.
That's
hit,
the way you did.
Yeah.
You can't get no hit no other way.
But to Tony's point, you've got a generation that's lost kind of that work ethic.
Yes.
Of being a working musician.
Thank you.
Working musician. There's an ethic.
Work ethic is funny. Yeah. That's cute. Yeah.
But it's true.
It is really true.
It's true.
I mean. But again, also, we talk about, we're talking about the industry right now. We just talked about this last week. Right? So Memphis is this area is well represented this year at the Grammys. We've got Cedric Burnside up for Best Blues Album of the Year.
Yeah.
He's definitely representing the Burnside family and what they bring into the world. Thank God for them. And then, of course, we've got Uptown Funk. We've got Boo up for a Grammy up for that, which... Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what where Lana went. I thought she was coming in.
But what is that track if not digging up that old Memphis sound and maybe putting a little polish on it?
Well, that gives us hope. That gives us a lot of hope. But we have to also, I want everybody to understand, we still have to set precedence on the fact that there are other artists that are not being heard.
Absolutely.
Not been given a chance. Mm-hmm. They are super artists, musicians, singers, all of these people who are creative people, writers, they're not given the opportunity because there's no venue, like you said. There are no Starlight Reviews.
Well, there is this.
Goodwill Reviews.
This is it. This is it. I can't do it all by myself.
Right.
We got you back, baby. We got you.
Well, I know, and I'm mighty proud of that.
Let's turn this down upside.
I'm with you. Let's turn it down and
because if we can do it together, listen, no one person can do it by themselves anyway, so you can forget that.
Right.
You must have a conglomeration of people who are mind-like, who think heart-like, like you, and want to have something that's greater, not selfishly, but want to have it because it is what it is. It should be.
It should be.
And it's for the masses. It's for the masses.
Three of you created music that was meant for everybody.
Everybody.
It wasn't a specific genre. It wasn't a specific target audience. It was for everybody.
Everybody.
And that doesn't exist.
Right.
No.
And what you guys have done over the years, it still warms my heart. And hearing your record that you're doing right now with Milk and Green is just, God, it's a wonderful record.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
I compliment Boo, although I hadn't been over there. I offered to come over and work with him when Willie passed.
Mm-hmm.
But he went another direction.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you see, the rhythm section, he still had them. But they went another direction, and I just couldn't go that direction he went.
Right.
Because when the company sold out in 77, I definitely heard God speak to me. Told me not to get involved in that.
That was me, man.
John's over there whispering.
Don't get involved.
Yeah, don't do it, man.
I couldn't get involved in today's system of music.
Right.
Because I got too much history that I have.
Right.
And I have to carry that. So, I mean, got to be a laid back drummer around here somewhere.
You got to maintain integrity.
Consciousness. With that happening, I had to move on.
Yeah.
It wasn't an idea I didn't want to help him.
Right.
But he had went another way. Now, I had came over there and cut a couple of times. I saw how they worked over there, and I saw what was going on. I saw no machines turning. I saw computers and things, you know. And I was used to when Willie was there, the machine was turning. So I wasn't really up on the computer and stuff. But, I mean, I was kind of getting into it, working with Boo. And it was kind of cool, but it wasn't really the real deal working with Pop.
Right.
And that was the key.
You got spoiled.
He's
a spoiled one, not me.
That's the reason why today I'm still cutting hit records over that Electrophonic like John Naiman and Cindy Lauper.
That's right, you got Scott Bomar working the board for
you. We got a new album getting ready to come out, you know, Deke Dickerson, you know, because he's still over there the way I used to be with Satellite Records, because I mean that's the tradition.
Well, we still got to give in too, I think, a little bit.
Yeah,
with the technology, you know.
Of course.
Oh yeah,
we got to give in too.
I would like to see it done where everybody, you know, all the violins on the floor at the same time. The
Well, that's not to say that you can't do that.
You can do it.
You can compromise and blend the two worlds. Exactly. Yeah,
it's going to cost you an arm and a leg compared to how easily.
Yeah, we'll make something happen.
Make something happen. That's the key. Make something happen. You figure it out.
In France, that's what I requested.
Yeah,
I requested in France to make sure. That I wanted this. I want my strings. I want my horns, because that's what I grew up on.
That's Memphis.
And so that's Memphis. Right. And so they are now seeing, as we are getting ready to embark upon a new thing in 2016, the Tony Green thing.
Next week.
Yeah. My thing, and it'll be my chance to now hopefully do some other greater things, you know, to expand upon what we have already, you know, done.
Right.
This is the foundation. You got to lay a foundation. True. As you have laid all of your years, right. And you are so spoiled with it.
No,
in a good way, Howard. You're good looking, but you're still spoiled. Okay.
Thank you.
Did I do that real good?
You did beautifully.
But you see, it can all still work, though.
Oh, of course. We're going to compromise together. Yeah.
Putting it all together, mm-hmm. the whole skills of the technique. I've seen Stevie Wonder do it many times. Mm-hmm. I got a tape at home. I found out a whole lot of things he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him play the set. I saw him play the bass. I saw him play everything. Then I saw him sit down with the computer.
Yeah.
That's how I found out, and I said, oh, because I was wondering all them different patterns, overdubs, I seen how he did it.
You know,
it's cool the way that he
The problem with modern technology, and it probably isn't much different from what you guys went through, was that the real problem in today's day and age is it's so simple to overproduce a record.
Yes.
Because it's at your fingertips. Yeah, you can actually go too far.
Yeah.
But what you guys have all gone through in an analog environment was that didn't happen.
Right.
You would really have to throw some effort to really screw up a hit record.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I would think.
Yeah.
A lot of times that would happen, but we had the geniuses on the board who would really work it out for us before.
Yeah.
So you have to have that. I mean, people like, you know, Willie Mitchell, wonderful, had the greatest ears, and then you had the master,
William
the
Browns.
Mastering, William Brown on the
Larry
mixing.
Nix.
Larry Nix can't get any better.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, let me tell you a quick story about Larry Nix and Willie Mitchell, since I was the last person that was recorded. We had to make sure that I wanted the great mastering to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But Larry Nix and Willie Mitchell hadn't talked for years.
Really?
Oh! But Tony Green brought them together. And that's what we all have to do with each other.
Mend some fences here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they hadn't talked in over 20 or 30 years.
Really?
But they both loved me. Larry Nix was excited about me. And Willie was excited about me, and I wanted it done, you know, with the two. And
well, who else would you get to do it?
Were other people, but not those people. So when I got it together, got them together, and they were so excited. Let me tell you, it was like two guys had been fishing for a long time, and they were like really talking and whatever. And Willie told me before, he said, "Hey, you something, girl." You know, you can get on out of here. But it was a really good thing. And that's what we're going to have to do, Howard. Like, on some of your things, I need to say, hey, Howard, I need Howard on my drumming. I need him to do
this.
You have to say, I need Tony to do some vocals. No, it's the only way it's going to work.
That's exactly right.
You
it
know,
does work
if
that way.
You don't, if we don't pull
we
each other in,
exactly.
It is not going to work, guys. I know it might not be all the time everybody's project, but say something.
Yeah.
Well,
say
you know,
something.
Ask. You won't know until you ask.
Well, let me say this.
Hello. Yeah. Hey, did
since
I get a job?
Since you said that, it's amazing you said that, because Scott Beaumont and I was just discussing about doing a record on you.
Uh-oh.
Oh, wow.
What?
Wow.
You heard it here first,
oh,
world.
My goodness.
We was discussing.
I love you, Howard.
And he said, really would like to record Tony Green. He said, we need
there you go.
A blues sing. I said, well, why not?
Why not?
Let's cut.
Why not? Come on. Come
talk
on
to her and see. So I don't know whether he's back yet from the holidays, because he went to Florida with his wife, with mother-in-law and them. So I hadn't heard from him yet, because I have an album to be out, I think, in January.
Well, I've been asking him to cut Tony for years.
Well, he brought it up to me, so I'm letting it out over the radio.
All
right.
This is so much overwhelming stuff. To
so much overwhelming. Let's have another Rolling Rock.
Yeah. All right, so the album, you have an album coming out in January.
Yes.
I'll need one another.
I got to get Scott, man. Scott Beaumont.
Is this a Bokeh's album? I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Bokeh's album.
Yeah.
The Bokeh's.
Yeah,
coming out January, new one.
Ooh, nice. I hope you got a copy with my name on it.
Yes.
We can get it over here on the radio. Got to get it out.
$9.95, Rick.
Okay, not a problem.
How much did mine cost?
Scott done did a lot to help Memphis music.
Yes.
Reach absolutely. Back to old singers like myself. So come on, man. I want you to work with
Scott
me.
Scott has done the Lord's work.
And yeah. Absolutely.
Really exactly. Has. That's how I feel. Yeah.
Okay,
you know,
cool.
He's helped a lot of Percy Wiggins. Mm-hmm. One of the best, one of the vocal. Best mm-hmm. talents wow. Memphis have ever known. Spencer Wiggins.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Oh, he reached back and got guys like that. And for that, I will always be indebted to him and do whatever I can to help him in any projects. Like Tony was saying, we got to help each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I told him, man, I'll do free shows if it'll help you pay for your studio when he first started. You know, he remember he had the house over here off Parkway. Mm-hmm. That's what we were working out and where it was the drama at the time.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, we'll get the studio, man. So, well, look, if we just work and take the money to put toward the studio, mm-hmm. you know, that's the kind of things we're going to have to do to help each
mm-hmm.
other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, mm-hmm. and he's giving back. You know, he's giving back. Not to say that no one else has, because there's a lot of people that have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But recently, in recent history, it's been Scott Beaumont.
That's my purpose for being with the group.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and I appreciate
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to come back, but thank you guys for opening up the doors for people like myself who don't get an opportunity, for all of us don't get an opportunity to be on air because it is not a possible thing with the mainstream of the radio industry.
No, it's different.
Who would not bring artists on, and it's a shame because they're killing the great artists out there who are very, very talented, and I thank you. I really do.
Yeah. It won't happen unless I have a say in it.
All right, Rick. Come on. Come on.
We're going to take care of it. We'll do it again.
Show you right.
Miss Tony Green, Howard Grimes, and John Gary Williams. It's been a pleasure. We've had a fantastic time tonight.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see you guys soon. How about that?
That sounds like a win.
All right.
Thank you.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
It's rightfully been nominated as for a Grammy for Best Blues
yes,
Album.
Yes, sir.
Cedric is in the studio with us. Thank you so much for coming down, and thank you for this album, by
man,
God.
Thanks for having me, and you're welcome, man. You're welcome.
Yeah, he's right. This brings your faith back into the full long form recording instead of just a single here and there.
Yeah, that's
because you
like
want
to
hear it from top to bottom, and then hit it again. It is so good. You and Trenton Ayers did the record, right?
Trenton Ayers and my uncle Gary Burnside.
And Gary's on
it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow.
There's 13 tracks on there. We did about 10 tracks in one day.
Mm.
And the next day we come back and did the rest of them. And then we did vocals. 3 days we was done. I've never been nominated for a Grammy before, man. So yeah,
enjoy the process.
Yeah, I'm gonna at least look at the red carpet.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Everybody needs a lava lamp to have in their home or their office because they're just cool. They're just awesome pieces of tools of great wonder and excitement. I know I'm making a big deal out of it because our friends at Wizards have them on sale right now. You can buy them online. Look for them. Look for their banner ad at radio-memphis.com. Wizards Memphis is another place you can search and you can find it. Go get you one of these groovy lava lamps and do some. It's an alternative smoke shop and it's a groovy spot. It's been that way for a long time. We love the kids over there at Wizards and they are sponsors of this part of the program. And all you have to do is go online, get you one of these things, and you're helping out a cool business here in Memphis. Wizards, 1999 Madison Avenue here in Memphis, open 7 days a week, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Wizards, because it's still smoking. All right, it's time to get into a little bit of music as we do here on the show here from Radioland. The artist this time out, we had the lead singer of on the show. John Gary Williams was a part of a great band called the Mad Lads. They were active about 1964 to 1972, and now they're coming back together, and they've done some other stuff, including this selection from the boys. They had worked with Willie on this particular track because, you know, Willie was that kind of guy. He was just a tremendous producer and knew how to work with these guys and make a great sound. So let's give it a listen, shall we? The Mad Lads. This is from about 1995, and this is called The More You Give, right here from Radioland.
Every day I thank God for you, because you've been a blessing in my life, and the love that we share is unbeatable. I want you to know I appreciate each and every moment of this time that we've spent together, and that I hope it lasts for years and years and years. The more you give, seems like the more I need, and the more you please me, the more I wanna be pleased by you. You're my reasons, girl, for living. If it was not for your love, I would not be giving you my love. The more you give, the more I need. The more you give, the more you give, the more you give, the more you give, the more, the more I need. Listen, baby, girl, tell me, Bill.
That's that soul sound that we always like to hear coming out of this area, and still very popular. They, you know, the band was technically known as an R&B or a doo-wop group from the label Volt. They were out of Stax at the time. Some great guys. They really were such a lot of talent there. And it's good to see that they're, you know, there's a form of this group that has still come back together, and they're going to be doing some more. So there you go. The Mad Lads right here from Radioland. So there you go. You heard what's coming up next week. Yeah, it's another Grammy nomination type deal. How about that? You heard us talking about Boo Mitchell, who is Willie's son, is up for a Grammy, and as is our guest next week, the great Cedric Burnside. It's going to be a lot of fun, so there you go. If you're new to the program, thank you. Welcome to it. You can find us in a million places. Just search Rick Cheddar from Radioland. If you'd like to drop us a line, we'd love to hear from you. Radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. That's Radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. Drop us a line. Say hello to us. We'd love to hear from you, and maybe there's somebody you'd like to hear on the program. We can probably make that happen. In the meantime, I'm out. That's it. It's been good. Take care of yourselves. Take care of one another. We'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.